You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Hi, I'm Sherry Davis, Canada's Dog Master and the trainer of Rex on the hit TV series Hudson and Rex. This week, we're going to learn how dogs like to play. Welcome to How to Dog. There's an old saying, play is a child's work. Well, the same thing could be said of dogs. When your pooch is chasing a ball or rolling around with another dog at the park, it's having fun. But it's also learning all sorts of things that will apply to different areas of its life. This week, it's all about toys and how important they are in your dog's life.
Hey, how did the scientist test the dog toy?
Beats me.
She brought it to the lab. Hi, everyone. A reminder that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and is not meant to be professional advice. Always consult with an expert when taking care of your own doggo. Over to you, Sherry.
My first guest today is Robert Houseman. He's a certified trainer, canine behavior consultant, and the co-founder of Dog Boy NYC, which helps owners manage their dog's behavior. He's been featured on Good Morning America, NBC Dateline, and in the New York Times. Robert, welcome to How to Dog.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Could you tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Robert Houseman. I am the co-founder and lead trainer at Dog Boy NYC in New York City. We do training and behavior consultation for all dogs and their people. I work with all breeds, all ages, everything from my dog pees on the carpet to my dog is aggressive and rowdy towards other things or fearful, which living in an urban environment can be a little extra tricky considering the limited space and the density of population. Can sometimes be, if you have a dog who's a little fearful of noise and you live in downtown Manhattan, it can be an extra challenging starting point for your dog. So yeah, we do everything from basic obedience, early learning, socialization for puppies, and then we do behavior consultation for fears and phobias and any kind of reactivity, things like that.
This is a topic that is very true to heart here because we're talking about toys and playing. When you're talking about behavior problems and stuff, you know, there's a lot of people out there and they're all about food training and food. And so many times I have people call in or they'll phone and they'll just say like, you know, my dog isn't food motivated. So, you know, it's impossible to train them, my trainer says.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping you can shed a bit of light on this.
Oh, yeah. I have a treat pouch that I use for work that's usually filled with all kinds of goodies. But in front of that treat pouch, I also keep a little squeaker that I extracted from one of my dog's two toys. Or actually, I should say that she extracted from one of her two toys, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, I keep a little squeaker in there. I might have a tug toy or rope toy or something on hand. A lot of dogs might be totally distracted by the environment if you're carrying even the most delicious food item. But if you've got a tennis ball with you, your dog is laser focused. A lot of this and a lot of training in general, whether you're training for agility or nose work, or you're trying to teach a dog how to relax in a more stimulating environment, like you really need to know your dog. You know, people need to kind of have a good sense of what motivates their dog and utilize, you know, their dog's preferences and motivating and reinforcing. So food might not be it, especially if they're overstimulated and excited. You might need to capture that motivation.
Okay, so now I'm going to be the devil's advocate here because a lot of people say, well, toys are supposed to be fun and, you know, I'm supposed to be training and that's like serious stuff.
Yeah, but I am the first one to support the idea that training should be fun for all involved parties, whether it's a you, your dog, everybody should be having fun. Otherwise, it's a chore. And I find, you know, people are like, oh, I don't know if I can carve out that much time. And I'm like, if you're not having fun doing it, your dog's certainly not going to have fun doing it. And you're going to struggle for longer. So, you know, keeping it light, keeping it fun, even with some serious, you know, we're doing kind of big, bad, serious behavior things. If a dog has separation anxiety and you can turn the desensitization and counterconditioning that you're doing around that into a game where the dog thinks, oh, sweet, we're playing the game where you leave the house. I love this game. As opposed to you thinking you're doing like this, like serious stoic work where the dog has to perform and you're adding stress. It's, you know, everything should keep it light, have fun, keep it airy. And if you're training your dog and you and your dog aren't both having a good time, you have to reassess what you're doing.
Now, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm taking my dog who may not be the most social guy in the world. And people always say, take him to a dog park, take him to a dog park. So I grab my toy and I take my dog and I get into the dog park and I throw my ball to my dog. But there's 20 other dogs in there that all of a sudden want the same toy. Is this necessarily the right thing to do?
No, I mean, again, this comes down to know your dog. And especially in Brooklyn and Manhattan, where I do a bulk of my training, like you might have a 40-foot by 40-foot dog park filled with dogs. If your dog's not social or your dog's not eager and excited, even my own dog, we tend to go to open field type areas to play or even to walk around. She's social and she gets on with dogs, but she doesn't care for them bearing down on her or trying. She gets scared. She gets spooked if a dog's coming in too hot. And that's just who she is. So I don't put her in a situation where she's going to be uncomfortable. That's not the point. And I think a lot of this too, like even going back to your point about, oh, my dog's not food motivated. What should I do? Or she's not food motivated. So training is impossible. I mean, knowing your dog, setting them up for success. Sometimes people feel this pressure that they have to bring the dog to the dog park or the dog has to go to daycare or the dog has to do this specific thing or that because they read it in a book once or they got the advice from someone at some point. Your dog doesn't have to do anything that they're not comfortable with. So if your dog is not comfortable playing in around 20 other dogs, then you're only setting them up for more stress and proliferating the problem. If your dog is having some social anxiety, you want to make sure that you're setting them up for the most success that you can. And in some cases, that's just not the spot for them.
I'm Sherry Davis, and today on How To Dog, we're talking dogs, toys, and play. Later in the show, I'm going to speak to Lindsay Merkham. She has a PhD in studying dog behavior and is a doctoral level board certified behavior analyst. That's coming up shortly. Right now, I'm speaking to Robert Houseman. He's a certified trainer and a canine behavior consultant and the co-founder of Dog Boy NYC, which helps owners train and manage their dog's behavior. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of dog parks. You have one person who comes in and they take that toy and throw it, and all of a sudden there's a dog fight in the park, and these dogs were getting along fabulously before this happened. Can you give us insight as to a do or a don't there? Like, why does this happen?
Well, you know, competition and arousal, basically. Dogs, a lot of times in a dog park, are already kind of firing on all cylinders and chasing each other around. There might be kind of an elevated social anxiety or arousal around the dogs who are in the park. They're just already idling pretty high. And then if somebody comes in, and there was actually a woman who used to come to the park, and she's a lovely woman, really well-meaning, great dog owner, but just a little misinformed her. She would come in with a whole pouch filled with dehydrated lamb lung and just start handing it out to dogs. And there was always, inevitably, dogs would get scrappy over it because it's a limited resource in a tightly packed space. Everybody's competing for it. And same thing can happen for a toy. And if you're, a lot of times dogs are, hyper-focused on playing fetch, and you bring your dog to the park with their tennis ball and the dog is just bearing down that tennis ball and mildly obsessed with it. And then six other dogs want to get in on the game, and that could actually stress your dog out considerably. There might also be a dog in there that has a guarding problem that you don't know about, and the owner might not even know that the dog has this problem because it's never been in such a highly elevated state. So, just err on the side of caution. If your dog really loves to play with other dogs and be social and chase and wrestle, then the dog park might be a good match for it, a good place for it. Same thing goes for daycare. If your dog is a little squirrely around other dogs, or maybe feels threatened or intimidated, or really just wants to focus on the ball, you might want to find another option, a bigger space where you can solely focus on your dog and play and fetch. Even in New York, there are places you can go where you can throw the ball for your dog and have plenty of space between the other dogs in the area. But you have to kind of engineer it a little bit, and just, even if it might be a little bit less convenient than going to the dog park down the block, but you got to figure out what works for your dog for the long run. And I'll see people sometimes just keep trying and keep trying. They might even get the advice, like, keep trying. You know, he had a hard time in the park, but he's just not well socialized, or he's just young, or he's just an adolescent, or, and they keep going back, and it could just keep, whatever dogs practice is what they're getting better at. So if they're practicing being antisocial and agonistic towards other animals, then they're just getting better at it. And they're learning that in order to create social space, they need to be threatening, then they're going to learn to do that. And it could turn into a leash reactivity issue, could turn into a house guarding issue, or, you know, this is not worth it. You just say to yourself, where is my dog most successful and most happy? And where is it less stressful for me? And everybody's quality of life goes up. You just get to that spot and find an activity that blows your dog's hair back and enjoy each other.
I say to people all the time, imagine taking your kid to daycare for the first time and taking the monkey that they sleep with, that they, you know, that's their pacifier. And as you drop your kid off for daycare, you grab the monkey out of their arms and you throw it into the middle of the daycare room and watch all the kids go tearing after it. And then you wonder why your kid is having a meltdown, or why your kid has turned into like a little feisty fireball and wants to go after everybody, right? Like it's kind of the same scenario.
Totally. If on top of that, you don't do that until middle school, you might have a whole different,
yeah.
You know, if you don't take, exactly. If your kid doesn't socialize with classmates until they're in middle school, and then you do that, that could be a whole, you take their phone and throw it in the middle of the room, see what happens. Right.
I have a lot of people calling in and they're like, my dog has all the toys in the world and keeps taking my shoes. And they want to make my shoe the best chew toy. Is there a reason? What can we do about it? I tell people, put your shoes away, but, you know, what is there another option here?
Well, a pound of prevention is worth its weight in gold, obviously. But then, you know, making sure that when your dog is not stealing your shoe is when they're getting your attention, and stealing your shoe maybe is less exciting for the dog. But I would, you know, utilizing, you know, this is a great spot where interactive toys can really come in. The dog stealing your shoe and getting your attention might be the dog might be a little bit bored, or maybe it's not getting enough playtime with you and it's coercing you into it because it knows that grabbing this item makes everybody get up. I've seen it where kids come home from school and they say hi to the dog and the dog gets all excited, and then the kids sit at the table for snack time and homework and everybody starts ignoring the dog, and the dog finds its way into one of those kids' bedroom to find not just any of the kids' toys, but the one special stuffy that the kid has slept with since he was two. And they come out not to destroy it, but to parade it around the table. And everybody gets up, everybody chases the dog. The mom comes out to try and get the dog. The kids are trapping the dog under the table, and the dog knows that they can turn it into the show. They can turn all attention to them by doing that thing. So make sure that your dog has plenty of items that you're engaging it with. And you know, the main part is you're engaging them. You know, otherwise, they'll find other ways to engage you. And they're usually not your favorite.
I tell people all the time, everybody walks by or goes, shh, the dog's just doing nothing. Shh, don't bother it. Don't talk.
That's
to
exactly
it.
Right.
Right. But the bad dog, they're always like, wah! I'm like, try and change that. Try and ignore the bad dog and try and give all the praise to the dog that's just sitting, looking out a window, minding its own business, because, you know, that's a great thing. But instead, people are like, finally, the dog's like that. Finally, the dog's not causing trouble. Don't touch it. Don't talk. Don't move. Don't go to the bathroom. Don't turn on a light. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this dog has everybody trained.
That's so funny. Yeah, everybody wants the dog to look like an L.L. Bean catalog. And then whenever they are, they ignore them.
Exactly.
Even removing that's what I mean, too, is like sometimes people I'll say, you know, well, why don't you put the shoes in the closet? And they say, well, I don't feel like I should have to change my life for the dog. And I say, well, look, you invited the dog into your life. This might be a temporary solution, because once the dog's matured a little bit, we've done some training, the dog's having its physical exercise, mental stimulation, and environmental enrichment needs met. You've learned to give it attention for good behavior. then we can maybe reintroduce those shoes again. Like, it's not something that may have to be forever, but a pound of prevention is worth its weight in gold, because if you can't ignore the dog when they're chewing on your shoes, then you're inevitably going to be reinforcing a behavior you don't want to see. When it comes to training, playing, introducing toys or other activities into your dog's life, it's important to remember you're not doing it to them, you're not doing it for them, you're doing it with them.
I actually love that analogy. I think that something just clicked, and so true. That is wonderful advice. Robert, I can't thank you enough. Our listeners surely got some good advice today. So thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, it was super fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Robert Houseman is a certified trainer, behavior consultant, and the co-founder of Dog Boy NYC, which helps owners manage their dog's behavior. I'm Sherry Davis, and this is How to Dog. Today, we're talking toys and play. What could be more fun than that? So, guys, have you ever had those really cold days where it's snow and rain and ice and you think, oh, I don't want to take the dog out and it's kind of terrible weather out there? Or maybe it's just a thunderstorm and your dog isn't comfortable in the rain. Well, those are the days that I love to play games with my dogs inside. And toys are a way to start utilizing their brains. It's exercise. And together with using a toy and a little bit of ingenuity, you can have your dogs learn new tricks. So what I would do is, in bad weather days, I take a toy and I'll show it to the dog. I'll go and put it somewhere in the house. Then I'll let the dog see it and I get them all worked up and I'm like, go get it. And they go get the toy and I clap my hands and give them a treat and it's all fun. But then what I do is I eventually take them into a different room. So I'll show them that I've put the toy somewhere in the room. Then I'll take them to another room. And then I'll move the toy from where I put it. And then I send them in to find the toy. So now what I'm actually doing is I'm teaching the dog to use their nose, their eyes, their sensories. And I'm actually exhausting the dog mentally because it's got to learn all these new tricks and find the toy. And together we exhaust each other. So there's a little tip for y'all. It's a great way to train your dogs to use their minds. My second guest today is Lindsay Merkham. She has a PhD in animal behavior and is a board certified canine behavior analyst. Her primary research interest focuses on the benefits of human-animal interaction, enrichment, and training for improving the welfare of both animals and people in society. Lindsay, welcome to How to Dog.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Could you please tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Dr. Lindsay Merkham. I'm actually an associate professor now at Monmouth University in West Long Branch, New Jersey in the United States. There I run the Human Animal Wellness Collaboratory. It's a human animal interactions lab that is devoted to applying the science of human animal interactions to promote the well-being of both people and animals in our society.
Could you tell us about the study that you're doing about dog play and interaction with humans?
Sure. This was actually a study that I did while I was still a graduate student at the University of Florida, but it was a study looking at how human attention might play a role in facilitating play between dogs. So we had an interesting observation, just me interacting with my own dogs, me working with other people's dogs, that sometimes we would notice that the dogs in the home would play more, be more playful with each other when people were kind of present versus when they weren't present, or when they were maybe present, but just not attending to them and ignoring them. So there's a lot of sort of interest and research on how attention plays a role and how dogs specifically perceive human attention and how sensitive they are to different cues that we give off. I think the significance of that study really just showed that attention does play a role in dog-dog play, something that we think may only really be limited to what the dogs themselves are communicating. But it seems that for a variety of reasons that we could guess or theories we could guess about, that the attention of the human does sort of facilitate or promote positive play interactions between the dogs.
So I'm going to be the devil's advocate here because I have a daycare facility. And right away when we're talking and I'm listening to this conversation, two boxers, well, one boxer, her name was Keisha, jumps right into my brain. And Keisha was a dog that, you know, apparently when they were at home, she would like almost go through the window at other dogs. If the owners came to pick her up or drop her off, we had to make sure that there were no other dogs entering or exiting the daycare facilities. But as soon as we took the dog and the owner left for work, that dog went and played with like 45 other dogs, never, ever caused a fight, licking and kissing. We've got videos of it. And as soon as we brought the dog out, we could have people there, our staff, dogs. It didn't matter who was around. The dogs were fabulous. As soon as the owners entered the building, those dogs turned severely aggressive, like would rip the throat out of another animal. Can you tell us, is that, like, obviously it had to be owner, like, did the dogs feel they had to protect the owners, or like, obviously that played a huge part, having the owner present to having the owner absent in the dog's psyche?
Sure. Yeah. I think that's a very interesting observation. And one I see as well, not only at doggy daycares, but it's analogous to what I see in dog parks sometimes as well. And I think the context is really important, like the specific setting. I should mention that in our study, we studied dogs in their homes, in areas where owners reported that their dogs regularly played. But certainly I could see in a doggy daycare situation like you're reporting, or like I said, in a dog park or some sort of place where the dogs might be with unfamiliar dogs, where it might not be as a familiar place, that maybe the attention of the owner, the presence of the owner, facilitates other sorts of interactions with the dogs, right? So it could certainly be, and I think it's different for different dogs. So certainly some dogs may feel the need to protect their owner. Other dogs may just be a general sort of over arousal with the owners being present. But I definitely would agree with, you know, what you're saying too, that we've seen that as well. But I think it's heavily tied to whatever setting or situation that they are in at the moment, and then also the familiarity of the other dogs that they're around.
So I got a question for you, because being in the animal industry for 30 years, we have a training facility, a boarding facility, grooming facility, daycare facility. But I've got a question for you, because this I find very interesting. We've got dogs and they play and they play, you know, you've got 40, 50 dogs running around playing together. And we've got some dogs who come, they are like biting the bit to get in the door. They're so excited. And then they get in and they're like, ew, dogs. And they run right for the toys, and they're in the toy box, or they're in the ball bin, or they're in the swimming pools. And they really don't interact a whole lot with other dogs. And even with humans, it's like, oh, no play, but they'd rather, where's the ball? The humans are basically a toy dispenser to some of these dogs. And they are so self-involved in just grabbing toys and playing with toys and diving in the ball pit or jumping in the pools and dropping something and digging it back out and running. And is that like our, why is that? Can you tell us why that is?
Sure. Again, I have some theories. You're probably going to hear this theme quite often, me saying this, but it'll certainly depend on the individual dog and what their specific learning history is, or experience or conditioning is with, with toys or with being with dogs in the other settings. But I do think certainly, you know, we know that there are dogs that do prefer to engage with toys versus other dogs. And so that's, certainly at play. I also have seen, again, in the dog park setting, but also in doggy daycares and also in my own home and in others' homes, that dog toys can sometimes act as a way to redirect or to distract or disrupt a potential conflict with another dog or another person. So almost not quite like a toy is an outlet necessarily, but more like a toy is a disruptor or a way for a dog to sort of regulate sort of those potential conflicts and to kind of detract or disrupt a potential conflict. I've also seen as well sometimes toys being used as things to initiate play with other dogs, certainly to initiate play with people. And we also have seen too that a lot of times, going back to human attention, that the attention of the human sometimes will also we find has gives dogs permission to play. If an owner is kind of, you know, giving off different play signals, clapping, kind of smiling, or just attending, that gives a lot of dogs a signal that now's an appropriate time to play, or now's an appropriate time to interact socially. Or if I engage in play, it's more likely that the owner or the person is going to participate if they're already attending to me. But what we do see sometimes is that toys, when just attention is not effective, or sometimes when the owners or the people are not attending to begin with, that toys serve as that way to sort of initiate play or to get the owner or other dog's attention when other sort of techniques are not effective. So I think that there are a whole host of reasons why dogs engage with toys and why they've learned to engage with toys as a way to initiate play or sometimes in some cases disrupt play or to disrupt a potential uncomfortable situation.
Is there any ill effect in a dog not wanting to socialize with other dogs, but rather just have its own play kingdom?
This is something that is so fiercely debated. I feel like even among scientists as well, and certainly among other canine professionals, whether dogs need to play with other dogs or need to have social interactions with other dogs. And to that, I always say, again, every dog is an individual and every dog has a different sort of tolerance and threshold and selectivity for how much they want to play with other dogs, how many types of dogs they want to play with, how tolerant they are of other dogs and social interactions. And that's all informed both by a combination of their breed and their genetics, but also very importantly, their experience, their lifetime experience and their conditioning and their prior experience with other dogs.
So in essence, they're very similar to people. I mean, my brother, he has, I don't even know, probably a gazillion friends. He'll walk into anywhere and start talking to people, and all of a sudden, they're like best friends, where I'm just not that type of person. So I guess dogs and humans are similar in that sense.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that's a really great analogy. And I think it's also important to remember that although we think or we tend to think of breeds of dogs as having, you know, very typical characteristics. So, for example, we think of golden retrievers as being very outgoing and friendly and sociable, that there is going to be variation within the breed as well. And then also, you know, to your point that a very gregarious or friendly dog may have days or times during the day where they don't feel like interacting with another dog. And, you know, we have to be sort of mindful of that as well. So yeah, just like people, not only can there be, you know, sibling differences, but there's definitely within breed differences that we observe. And then also just within individual differences too, depending on how they're feeling, the time of day, what else is going on, what other opportunities they have for enrichment. All of those things, you know, play a role in their willingness or interest in play and dog-dog interaction. As I'm sure you've seen in your doggy daycare, I'm sure you see like sometimes the same dog may be different from one day to the next.
You know, I have different play groups. When I put the dogs out, we have the general group, but then we have like the hyper group. And if I have a dog who is social, but not like crazy social, and I take it into a play area with a bunch of two-year-old dogs that are running and zinging off the wall and, you know, wrestling and melding and, you know, grabbing toys or ropes and pulling at each other. And that's not the play that my dog does. I'm setting my dog up for failure, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And that's so wonderful that you also are so proactive in your play management strategies, too, where you know those dogs well as an individuals, and you think very carefully about how you're setting up your play situation or your doggy daycare. So that's really, really wonderful. And a lot of conflict that I see, honestly, from, you know, between dogs and play just stems from a lot of times the owners wanting to really, they're so wanting their dogs to play. You know, they so enjoy seeing their dogs play, and why not? It's fun, and it always makes me smile when I see, you know, my dogs playing. But sometimes we so want them to play in those short moments that we can take them to a dog park, or we can take them to a play group or something like that. That we let our desire to want to see them play sort of override what they want. And so I have seen, especially in dog park situations, owners kind of pushing their dogs into or unknowingly or sort of trying to facilitate a play interaction that the dog's really not interested in. And that's when we see some of the conflict or the aggression coming out, or I won't call it aggression as much as like agonistic sort of defensive behavior. So it's definitely, you know, it's definitely something we have to always keep in mind, sort of what we want to see versus what the dogs want their experience to be in that moment.
Let me tell you, Dr. Lindsay, the information that you just provided us, could actually save a lot of dogs' lives and enhance their lives, because people might now be out there going, oh, so there's really nothing wrong with my dogs. Dogs aren't all going to be social creatures. Dogs aren't all going to love other dogs. So, I can't thank you enough for being with us today.
Thank you so much for your time. This was so much fun. And I hope your listeners enjoyed it.
Lindsay Merkham is a PhD level animal behaviorist and a board certified canine behavior analyst. All that play is hard work. No, seriously. Dogs learn so much by playing and interacting with other dogs, their owners, and even their toys. I hope you've learned as much as I have about relationships between play, toys, and learning. Now, go outside and play with your dogs. Hudson & Rex returns with all new episodes this January on City TV. And catch up anytime on City TV Plus, the City TV app, or at citytv.com. If you have time, please rate, review, and follow us in your podcast player of choice.
And now it's time for Fun Dog Facts.
Sometimes people say things are going to the dogs, which led us to wonder, how many dogs are there in the world? It turns out, the World Health Organization estimates this number, and according to the WHO, there are approximately 900 million dogs in the world. But before you think, wow, that's a lot of pets, about 80% of those dogs are considered to be free range, which means they don't have human owners. And at any given time, there are about 200 million stray dogs which once had a human responsible for them, but sadly don't anymore. And the country with the most registered dogs per capita? France, which has a dog-to-human ratio of 17 to 100.
How to Dog is hosted by Sherry Davis.
Produced by me, Davin Langell.
And me, Adam Killick.
Executive producers, Christina Jennings, Scott Garvey, and Sherry Davis.
Editing and mixing, also by me, Adam Killick.
Research by the amazing Nicole Saltz.
How to Dog is a Shaftesbury podcast produced in association with Rogers Sports and Media Incorporated and part of the Frequency Podcast Network.
You can find more great shows at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. Copyright 2022, Shaftesbury.